Hello, and welcome to Good People to Know, a Down to Earth podcast brought to you by WFI Insurance. We round up experts, specialists and people to know from around Australia and talk to them about the things that matter most to regional Australians. We've talked a lot about the importance of sustainability on the podcast. Technology has a key role to play, but what if the answer to more sustainable farming was right in front of us? In fact, it may be growing some of our paddocks already. In our last episode, I spoke with Nat Somerville, President of Australian Women in Ag and the National Farmers Federation Independent Board Member, who acknowledged how the Australian continent has been farmed for thousands of years.
You know, Australian agriculture goes way back. It goes further back than colonisation of Australia. You know, agriculture was being practised here for many thousands of years.
With native grasses, nuts, fruit and vegetables becoming an increasingly popular choice in restaurants and kitchens around the country, this presents a unique opportunity for farmers to work with their local traditional owners. In Narrabri, New South Wales, the University of Sydney is doing just that, working with local Gomeroi people to research native grains, traditionally used in the making of the world's oldest bread using modern farming techniques. To discuss the research and its potential applications, I shake hands with not one but two good people to know, Gomeroi woman Kerry Saunders from the University of Sydney and George Truman from New South Wales Local Land Services. From looking at crop productivity, nutritional value and profitability, the research should help inform other farmers who are thinking about diversifying and working with traditional owners. Kerry, I'd like to start with you. Can you start by telling us about Gomeroi country? What makes this part of Australia so special to you as a First Nations woman?
Yes. So my hometown where I live, Moree, on Gomeroi country, is special in the landscape, biodiversity, the black soils. So Moree means big waterhole and rising sun. And it's, yeah, black soil plains. It's got the grass, open grasslands, woodlands, floodplains, and amongst all that is the native grains.
In recent years, Kerry, there's been increasing research understanding of Indigenous agricultural practices that go back many thousands of years. Can you tell me how has the Gomeroi people worked the land?
So with research through Sydney University and myself, they lived on the land. So today, looking at the landscape, I can see that these species are there amongst every other species that's not native. But in some places, I look closely and I can see a whole bunch of them. That's where we're at. And as for, you know, connecting back to country again to look closely at these grains is... there's more research today.
So, Kerry, what were the crops they used and, you know, is there any stories around the crops that you can share?
Yes, so the research and what I'm doing now is some of the crops there. Well, I'm working with about 14 different types of native grains, whether they're from grasses, the plants, to some acacias, which are wattles. The grass species that are most, the ones that are mostly common would be the millet and the Mitchell, the curly Mitchell.
And are the practices used over all those thousands of years, does that still go on today? Is that still being preserved?
There are people that I know of that are working closely on country, doing different sort of farm techniques culturally.
So are you getting good information what the research is showing so far?
Yeah, I'm already out there doing my own bush tucker tours, and for me it's an everyday people grain. So while it's in season, people can go out and harvest these grains and have something to eat on the table for the night.
And do you think modern agricultural methods make this both a sustainable and a probably alternative to other crops?
We're working on that stage right now, but I have heard of other techniques where people are actually harvesting the grain but only in the florets. So there's another technique after that with a machine to separate the floret from the husk. So there's still, some work to be done.
Thanks, Kerry. So, George, just bringing you in now, you're with Northwest Local Land Services. And what got you interested in this project?
So, Andrew, I'm involved with delivering funding from the Australian Government's National Land Care Program. And one of the themes for the current round of funding was focusing on working with partners to increase our knowledge, our skills, our confidence, looking at tools and technologies and practices around adapting to current and emerging market demands and to adapt to climate change. So this project, when I heard about it through working with some other projects at the Sydney Uni, just really ticked all the boxes in terms of being able to try and provide some funding to, I guess, generate interest within the community. The university had a team of researchers working to look at the science behind it. But I guess we were really keen to actually extend that out to the broader community to try and engage with some landholders, some industry partners, to actually see whether the native grains had an opportunity to really extend and become a viable enterprise in the Northwest and then, you know, maybe beyond.
George, how are you going getting farmers interested and involved in the research?
Initially, we started off with just having some information sessions. So Angela and her team of Kerry and others at the university were keen to host some what was going to be field days and unfortunately ended up being webinars due to COVID. But just to provide an opportunity to hear from people about, as Kerry said, how native grains have been used in the past and how we could actually utilise that in more traditional methods and into the demands for current food production. Also finding out more about the growing of the native grains, as we were talking about, you know, what were some of the species that were suitable, that were easy to harvest, also that would provide the quantity, because as soon as you start talking about native grains for food production, you're looking at the size of the seeds. I mean, they're so tiny compared to, you know, your traditional wheats and oats and other grains. So looking at the what species, how easy it could be harvested, and how it could actually be incorporated into an enterprise. So those information sessions were held around the region, and they were really well attended and sort of generated that interest. And I guess that's what our involvement and the funding involvement was about, was getting the interested parties together to talk about, you know, what this really meant and how it could be progressed. So up unto date, getting the Indigenous groups, the local community, the farmers, and I suppose the potential end users, so they being, you know, grains and milling companies, and potentially cafes and those that are actually going to be utilising the grain in food making locally. Yeah, look, it's coming together well. It's these things take time. Certainly the work that the university's done, they've also engaged with the Chamber of Commerce. There's some other groups in Narrabri particularly. Look, it all takes time, but it's certainly starting to come together and there's really starting to gain ground.
So, George, in that response there, you've mentioned a wide variety of interested stakeholders, I suppose. It sounds like it's a sort of a real community sort of approach, including, you know, government. You mentioned the university. It really has got a lot of interested people having a look at this and being a part of it.
So, Les Knox is on the Chamber of Commerce, an Indigenous elder from the Narrabri area. Very well respected and has a lot of people really engaged, particularly with the Indigenous community. Just there at the end of last year, he organised a group of Indigenous people to help with a harvest. So a property at Balata was identified as having a large amount of native millet in an area adjacent to cropping that was sort of not being utilised. And we went out and had a harvest there. So it was just predominantly native millet, which allowed it to be easily sort of gathered up, not mixed in with other less desirable seeds. And that was brought back. And as Kerry alluded to, we started working on it at the university through the thrashing and de-husking process. So that was great. And that day there was, you know, five or six, I think it was up to 10 guys there. There was Les, myself and others. And from that, we actually put together a video that's then been made available through on YouTube to actually help to sort of, yeah, show how this whole process is evolving and what the different steps are.
So with that, George, you mentioned there was a native crop being farmed in a more traditional sort of manner. Has it required people to sort of, you know, give up land to help with this research opportunity, or is it just using where it's growing natively at the moment?
Yeah, so at this stage, it's identifying properties is through word of mouth. So it's there's no particular giving up. I guess the big thing about these native grains, and that's where it comes down to the climate and their resilience, is they're part of the natural landscape. So when it comes to adaptability to drier periods or wetter periods, then they're certainly a great resource to have. And I mean, in a lot of cases, these native grain areas are also grazed, but because they're a perennial grass, there's the opportunity to have the seed set and the seed collection throughout the spring and early summer, when most of these native pastures are actually seeding, but still then go through and be grazed accordingly as part of the livestock and grazing system. So I guess the big thing is that we're not sort of giving up country. It's about that value adding, I guess, to these already native grasslands. And yeah, so certainly if we can be collecting, you know, a potential food source in the form of grain and also the pastures being grazed, then it's certainly a benefit. And particularly, as we're saying, with the changing climate, whether it be wetter or drier, these pastures have been there for millions of years. They're adapted. And yeah, if we can utilise them, then it's certainly a benefit. And I guess that's the thing. In some of our western areas, they are a lot of cropping, and you've often got native grasses that are, you know, on buffer zones or in areas that can't be farmed. So it's often, you know, people are aware, if they're aware of that there's an opportunity there, then we've had no hassles or no problems so far with farmers or landholders being keen to see this resource being utilised, particularly if it's going to, one, provide employment, or also to provide that the traditional owners that more involvement with food production, and also for us to be recognising the value of that native grain that, that as Kerry mentioned, has had many traditional uses. And a lot of the interest now is, you know, paddock to plate type, you know, local provenance. So, and I guess that's the next step, is actually trying to take the product then to local markets, to actually see it being utilised in some, you know, cakes or biscuits or slices locally, and maybe sold through the local markets, you know, the local community markets, just to show then the whole process, that from a seed collecting in a paddock at Balata to being thrashed and crushed maybe at the university, to then being used in a cafe in the northwest in Narrabri, just to see that locally, we can then explore where it goes from there.
Yeah, as you said, George, that really shows the true paddock to plate, doesn't it? You know, from the harvesting at the start through to a local cafe, selling it through the entire process. So, George, you also mentioned, I'll throw this question to either Kerry or yourself, George, but you talked about currently, you know, it's been a lot of word of mouth. How you find that's working, and are you seeing a growing enthusiasm across the region for the project?
I see a lot of people that want to know where their food comes from, and I see that there's people that really want to connect back to healthy grains, country. So these grains are pretty much grown across country, whether there's floodlands or no floodlands. So there's a lot of people that's really interested in the grasses for food, biodiversity. It's healthy food that's been grown there for a very, very long time with little requirements, and does keep the country healthy. And if it can keep the country healthy and people healthy, people generally want to know.
Yeah, I think that's a great great combination, Kerry. Keep the country healthy and keep people healthy, I think.
Yeah.
We can get that to consumers. We've come a long way. And, Kerry, you touched on a point that I think is really important. And a lot of these podcasts, I've spoken to people about climate and variability of climate. And I guess this is an opportunity that we can look at things differently, and, you know, new ways we can provide food to people, and also, you know, open that up to new markets. But really, it's looking at it from a sustainable and a climate perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's people's grain at the moment. If whether you're a farmer, or, you know, urban or rural, so these grains are actually accessible to urban and rural people. I've been collecting native grains and processing them. They can be processed. So the one really good one is millet. And you can, you know, make the flour, it's educational purposes, or people just generally want to eat the native grains.
So just on that point, what does it taste like? What does the bread taste like?
The millet and the Mitchell both got their own unique flavours, and they both got their own nutrient levels. But I enjoy the both of them. They both are very nice and tasty to eat.
Yeah, so I was just going to lead on and say that when we had one of these information sessions recently, we also had a chap who Les is in contact with from Qantas who came to speak to us, and he actually is already utilising some of these native grains in the manufacturing of the products that we receive on our morning tea on domestic Qantas flights in Australia. So he's actually was sort of showing us how he could actually how he'd sort of started incorporating that in as part of the awareness. So if you do when you receive those muesli bars or those snack bars on those flights, it already states the presence of certain grains into some of those products. So yeah, certainly through Kerry and the university, they've had some information sessions where you've been making the biscuits. What were they, Kerry, that you call them?
Yeah, the Johnny Cake ones.
Yeah, so you've there's been a number of field days where we've and at the Sydney Uni demonstration day where we had the native grains as a display there for people. You were actually making the Johnny Cakes for people to taste, and I think it's they were certainly well received. It's certainly it's not, I guess, going to replace flour. It still needs to be, I suppose, incorporated into the milling process and the processing. And I guess, just talking to one of the milling companies here in Gunnedah, it's being able to secure the quantity. So I guess that's the challenge if we are going to sort of see it through to a viable or through to a native grains enterprise, then it's really going to build up that momentum. But certainly the work that's been done locally through the uni and with Les and others is certainly showing good signs of the capacity or the possibility of this being a viable enterprise.
And George, that's just led me the way when you've talked there about crops that are available on Gomeroi land. But I'm sure looking across the vastness of Australia, there are probably similar crops and practices across the continent. Do you know of any other studies that are going on in other areas, or is there other activity going on to diversify?
I guess we're sort of, I suppose, particularly with the thrashing or the processing side of it that Kerry's involved with, and also the harvesting is sort of to show that it is possible, but it really then relies on industry to really come on board to drive these things. As a university, we're involved with research with local land services, and through this sort of funding, we're able to sort of provide some opportunities to get people talking, to be communicating, engaging, and talking about the possibilities. But I guess the future of this sort of industry then really requires industry, as well as the Indigenous community and the community in itself, to really help to sort of drive it.
Yes, yeah, so from that point, I suppose it's a great first step from Qantas to be maybe an early pioneer of utilising this, as I said, on some of the things they serve on the flights. Kerry, for yourself, do you see this as something that Australians will order in the local cafe or will be putting in their trolleys sometime down the track?
We've still got more work to do, but I like to say that these grains can be accessible for everyone in the future, not too far in the future.
It's clearly good for the land, and as you said, Kerry, it's also so good for people. So there's got to be real opportunity there. So Kerry or George, if people are interested, how can they learn more or get involved potentially?
So they can reach out to the Sydney University or reach out to myself. I'll be happy to show them, the field, the food or paddock, the plate. I'll be happy to help in any way I can.
Yeah, so the university has a really good website there that has the section about the Native Grains Project, which outlines a lot about where it's come from and who's involved. So it's certainly the contact there for Kerry. We did a bit of a video which is on YouTube. So if you do search Native Grains, it comes up there, just to try and provide different opportunities to extend out the information to people on what's happening. Certainly keep in touch through Kerry for any future events that are occurring.
Yeah, I certainly agree, George. I had a look at the website earlier this morning, and there certainly is ample information on the site there to inform. And just as a final question, to both of you, I'd like to think this is going to lead to farmers potentially and communities in making stronger connections with their local traditional owners more generally, as we work together and communities come together on projects like this. So I think there's opportunity, as I said earlier, and I think Kerry, you came through quite strongly with what you said. This is a true, you know, way that communities can come together.
They can come together and share the knowledge and work towards the future.
100% agree. Like, there's already been an amazing cross-cultural connection just locally, as I said, through the university, the Les from the Chamber, the local land services, and just the Indigenous community locally. So it's certainly just, it sounds like, you know, small little achievements, but it's certainly in a big picture, these sorts of things that are happening are really, really great in terms of just building great community and connections with the traditional owners.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, Georgia, that big picture, but yeah, that grow a little bit every day and with the right passion and enthusiasm and support from, as you said, a number of organisations and community. I'd be really keen to follow this project. So I think it's really exciting and a great initiative. So well done to both of you, and good luck with the further work. Thank you for your time today and joining us. And I'm sure this is something that people are going to want to follow and take real interest in. So thank you for your time today.
No worries. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for joining me today for my conversation with Kerry Saunders and George Truman. Links to more information on the University of Sydney's research can be found in the show notes. Just like the University of Sydney is helping progress Australian agriculture through the latest research, WFI Insurance has a long and proud history of helping agricultural communities identify and mitigate their risks, protecting Aussie farms for over 100 years. Please join us again next time as we shake hands with more good people to know.